The Pat Kenny Show on News Talk
with Matter Private Network. During current restrictions, don't ignore your health concerns. Our expert team is ready to help.
Nightly curfews and recurring riots, the Netherlands is currently in the grip of anti-lockdown protests with widespread looting and vandalism. And this only adds to the woes of a country in turmoil following mass government resignations in the wake of a child benefit scandal. Now, to bring us up to speed, I'm joined by The Guardian's European Affairs correspondent, John Henley. John, good morning and welcome.
Good morning.
Now, let's talk about what's going on the streets of the Netherlands. How severe is the curfew and who are the rioters?
Well, the curfew was introduced on Saturday. It's from 9 p.m. till 4:30 a.m. And the very first protests kicked off, in fact, pretty much immediately on Saturday night after the curfew first came into effect. They were relatively small scale on Saturday night, but Sunday and Monday were much more significant, probably a total of about getting on for 500 people arrested over the three nights. Last night, by contrast, Tuesday night was quiet. I think there were a total of 33 arrests across the country. But talking to kind of experts and sociologists and criminologists and what have you, I mean, what they're saying is that these may have started as kind of genuine anti-lockdown, anti-curfew protests. But many of them didn't. And even those that started off that way were pretty much very soon taken over by kind of young troublemakers. I mean, the youngest of the protesters who was arrested on Monday night was just 14. And this was, you know, seems like basically, you know, bunches of kids organizing themselves on social media and getting out there kind of looking for a fight with the police and to smash a few windows. I mean, if you look at the polling, about more than 80% of the Dutch population actually support these strict measures, which of course have been brought in because of worries about the, you know, the rapidly spreading British coronavirus variant. And there's only about 11% of them who say that they find them kind of problematic or a burden. So the government, as you say, the caretaker government, as it is now, does have the support of the vast majority of the public.
Now, where did the rioting take place? In many cities and towns?
The biggest places were Amsterdam and Rotterdam and Eindhoven. Amsterdam and Rotterdam in particular, the police had to get out water cannon, send in the dogs. And in a couple of places, they also had to use tear gas. But they're also in a range of other much smaller towns and cities around the country, about a dozen places in all.
Now, the characterization of the rioters, the protesters, whatever they are, is there a profile? I mean, are they, for example, typically the kind of person who would be in another life a football hooligan?
Well, I mean, that is what several of the Dutch sort of local officials, mayors and what have you called them. The Dutch Prime Minister, Mark Rutte, was very clear about it. He said, you know, this has got nothing at all to do with protest. This is criminal violence. And that would certainly be borne out, I think, by the profile of most of those who were arrested, who tend to be, well, overwhelmingly young, male, been arrested for essentially sort of smashing shop windows, looting stores, setting cars on fire, and throwing stones at the police. I spoke yesterday to a Dutch criminologist who said that he actually correctly predicted that he thought the riots would or the protests would come to a pretty quick halt, because those who were protesting legitimately, who had genuine, you know, either political objections to the government or, you know, were kind of lockdown skeptics and anti-lockdown protesters, those who were kind of, you know, what you might call responsible citizens would shy away from protesting in the future because they could see essentially where these protests were leading.
Now, the fact that there's no government at the moment, the government has gone, and one would presume, since Mark Rutte kind of accepted culpability, generally speaking, in this childcare scandal, that this would be bad news for him. Not at all. He's tipped to head the next government as well. Remind us of what the childcare scandal was all about.
Yes, I mean it's actually a terrible scandal. It starts back to about 2012 or so, when the previous cabinet, which was also headed by Mark Rutte. I mean, he's just resigned. They resigned this cabinet. It was his third government, which resigned the other week. So back in 2012, the government launched a kind of efficiency drive to stamp out or at least look into allegations of fraud in the social security services and in benefits and that kind of thing. And as part of that, the tax office, the Dutch Central Tax Office, started looking at childcare benefits and instituted a kind of mass, pretty much unfiltered and certainly very unnuanced approach, where they basically started pursuing families who, according to whatever algorithm they were using or inspection methods they were using, which turned up some kind of anomaly in their applications. And in fact, it turned out that for many of these families, it was simply a matter of a form being filled out slightly wrongly or a signature being missed at the bottom of it, what did turn out to be an overclaim for childcare benefit, but only because one of the partners had changed jobs or whatever. So really minor errors. And these people, somewhere between 20,000 and 30,000 of them, were accused of fraud by the tax authority and pursued through the courts and ordered to repay without possibility of redress or appeal, ordered to repay the entire sum of the benefits they'd received. And this amounted to families that were obviously, because they were claiming child benefit, they're not particularly well off. I mean, this amounted in some cases to sort of 10,000, 20,000, 30,000 euros. I mean, there were families that were forced to move home. There were families that went bankrupt. There were plenty of couples that separated and kind of, divorced through the strain and the stress of the whole thing. And it was a quite brutal process. And it took some time to come to light. And the government has finally, Mark Rutte's government, has finally accepted at least political responsibility for it.
Hmm. And what kind of redress is offered to the victims of this injustice?
They're being offered, I mean, the government set aside 500 million euros, around about 30,000 euros for each family that was affected. That money is yet to be paid out, but we're promised it's sort of on its way. So there is that. They've apologized and they have resigned. But I think it's quite interesting in the sense that, the minister who was in charge of the social security system at the time of the scandal, as I said, was in the previous coalition cabinet. He was the Labour Party leader, who he resigned just before the latest cabinet resigned on the 15th. So, and he's kind of the person who's mostly associated with it in most Dutch people's minds. So I think it's kind of quite a smart move by Rutte in the sense that this cabinet, he can sort of claim political responsibility for this scandal, but the ultimate sort of political cost to him is going to be quite minimal, because Dutch Parliament is dissolved. The next elections are, which are kind of on a fixed term, period, they're due on the 17th of March anyway. Parliament was due to be dissolved very shortly, and the government was due to adopt this kind of caretaker role. So that only advanced the government's effective resignation only by a few days. And as you say, the polls show at the moment that Rutte's centre-right party is still well out in the lead, and he is, I guess, odds-on favourite. to be the guy who will be forming the next Dutch government, heading the next Dutch government.
So a canny move. Thank you very much, John, for joining us. That's John Henley, The Guardian's European Affairs correspondent.